Yes, listeners, we're going to be talking to Ann Byrne called Baking. The book is Baking in the American South. And I was joking with her when I said I needed help carrying it. It is so thorough and so filled with good information and also very big. So you got your money's worth with this book. And how long did it take you to... But you are born and bred, and I forget what generation you are in the South. Is it fifth or something?
It's about the fifth generation for me.
Yes.
Right.
So you know what you're talking about, but you still, I can tell from this book, that there was a lot of research that went into producing the book itself. How long
right.
did you have to research it?
It was a little over 3 years. Worked on the book, yeah, because, you know, there have been a lot of books written about baking in the South, but I felt like that no one had really ever written a book that it was very, had cast a wide net and really included 14 states in the South, from Maryland all and down south and over to Texas.
I was thinking, how did you figure out what you were going to include? Because it's a broader scope than what most of these Southern cooking cookbooks do.
Right. It's very broad, but I wanted it intentionally to be broad because I wanted to talk about recipes and people in the past as well as the present and recipes that are foundational to the South, but and people and stories that have not been told before. That was really important to me. So it's not a book about my family's baking in the South. It is a story about the South and the cultural aspects of the South, the complicated South, and how baking plays into that.
Well, I think if nothing else in this world, you hit on something that few people understand, is that it's not a single entity, the American South. It's very complicated, and you go over that quite well in your selection of recipes, your explanation of historical events, and very particularly with your description of the people intimately involved with the development, the culinary development of the South. That's why I asked you how long it took to research it, because it's so thorough.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it took a while, and it was, you know, the recipes came from a number of different sources, not just old cookbooks and private recipe files and diaries, but, you know, archives and boarding houses, the White House, you know, school cafeterias. So I really wanted a diverse collection of recipes that really spoke to an authentic South and not a South that a lot of people romanticize as being like Gone with the Wind, because that's really not
No, I don't think anybody has that idea of the Gone with the Wind.
Right.
But a lot of the people you mentioned are not probably everyday conversational figures. Although a lot of people, interestingly enough, we've interviewed, like I just opened the book and here's Kevin Gillespie. It
mm-hmm.
was an interesting
mm-hmm.
interview.
Right, so that's someone right out of the present. But I do go back into the past. I mean, I have recipes from, you know, I have Rosa Parks' peanut butter pancake recipe and George Washington Carver's sliced sweet potato pie and Edna Lewis's sourdough pancake. So it was important to, I think, go back into the past and talk about the culture of the South as well as the present and really talking to chefs like Kevin Gillespie.
You even have Minnie Pearl.
that kind of got my attention. Right. Well, I am from Nashville, and country music, you know, definitely plays into and has a role in Southern baking, because the largest advertiser on the Grand Ole Opry was Martha White Flour and Cornmeal.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they enlisted the help of Earl Flatt and Scruggs, Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs to go and play bluegrass music throughout the South on the Martha White bus, which would get a lot of attention and bring attention, because people who baked in the South then in the 40s, 50s, 60s, they all, you know, were busy working, but they listened to the Grand Ole Opry on the weekends. And so it sold a lot of product. There was a tie-in.
Well, I mean, actually in the North, I mean, I grew up in Pittsburgh, and everybody listened to the Grand Ole Opry in the North, too.
There you go.
So it was an ambassador kind of thing.
Well, and if you look at, you know, if you look at the South really more in regions as opposed to states, you'll see there are coastal regions, there are sort of the grassy Midlands, whatever, Kentucky, Tennessee. But then you've got in the hills and the mountains, the Appalachian, you know, ridge and going all the way up, that goes all the way up to you. And so I think that really a lot of the recipes and cultural traits of the people who have been in the mountains are very similar from, you know, Pennsylvania on down to northern Alabama.
Yeah, you even have notes on high altitude cooking, which you wouldn't expect. You wouldn't expect in a southern cookbook.
You would have, and I really didn't think about it till kind of late in the process. But then I realized that in North Carolina, there are a number of high altitude locations, Cashers and Highlands, so named, and these places in the mountains where people from the Deep South might have gone to escape malaria and to get above the malaria line. And so we think of them today as vacation places still, but they were very much a part of the South, even if they were sort of set off and apart from a lot of the rest of the South.
You know, your photography is extraordinary in the book.
Thank you.
You know, it really is. But something that really grabbed my attention was the, whatever you call that page right inside the front page with the recipe cards. I mean, I have these from my family, and they look exactly like, in fact, it looks like the same handwriting.
Well, that's my mother's. That's my mother's and my two grandmother's handwritings in that photograph we took. We just took I went through my recipe boxes and I brought them to the photo shoot and we scattered them on a table. Yeah, I love them. I don't think there's anything more beautiful than a handwritten recipe card. Really
beautiful. Oh, no. I mean, I immediately caught on to the, I mean, this caught my attention immediately because I have cards like this. You know, from my family.
Yeah. Very nice.
I don't know how you managed to even fit in all that you fit into this. But I didn't know, for example, that there were that many types of flour. When you go into that great depth. So many types of cornbread. You know, you start out with the question of what makes it so special? What makes
Southern
baking so special? I'm not sure that we actually answered that. What do you think it is?
Oh, I think I did answer it 482 pages later. I think I did answer it. Southern baking is the first and the finest style of baking in all of America, and it's rooted in history. But it is connected to the people and the land. And, you know, you could say that about any area of the country, you know, how the cooking is affected by the people who lived there, who settled there, and then the land, what grew, what ingredients they had to work with. But I think in baking in particular, the South was ahead of the rest of the country because we had a longer growing season, and we had the availability of corn and wheat in some pockets. But we also had a culture of people who were mostly poor and rural. And so we did not have the high-density population areas of the North where there may have been commercial bakeries. And without commercial bakeries in the South, people baked at home. And so baking became a source of pride, and it became a skill and an art like sewing or gardening or growing flowers or whatever else that was something that your family did, perhaps your mother did. And those recipes were passed down on recipe cards or in a cookbook or diary. So I think that baking has always been really elevated in the South and appreciated.
Well, certainly, I mean, there's really quality recipes for this, and you lay them out so that they're, you can follow them. I mean, a lot of books that explore old recipes actually can't really duplicate the directions. And you, it must have taken you forever to figure out how to phrase all these things so that people could actually today read it and understand it.
Right. Well, it is a fine line between taking an old recipe and being true to it, staying true to the recipe, but also making it doable for today's cook. And that's where I used, you know, cup, like for flour, cup measures, and as well as grams, so that people, you know, if you're just measuring flour with a cup or you really like to use a scale when you bake, you know, this book works for anybody.
Now, tell me about, or tell our listeners about, what tradition sparked the identifying of the person who wrote the recipe with the recipe. There are names attached to almost all of your recipes.
Yeah. Well, they belong to someone. Either this person was known for that recipe, and I think that's true in a lot of the book, is that people, you know, just became known for the recipe because that's what they made, and that was their dish, that was their recipe, or it, you know, it gave the book a sense of place, because, you know, there are a lot of biscuit recipes in the world, there are a lot of cornbread recipes, but if there's something unique about them, you know, for example, Rona Roberts' recipe for cornbread.
I'm just looking at it right now.
Oh, isn't that funny? Lexington, Kentucky. Yeah, I mean, she browns the butter. You know, she became a vegetarian, I don't know, 10 years ago, and, you know, doesn't fry bacon anymore, doesn't have bacon grease, doesn't want to put, you know, bacon grease in the pan for the cornbread. But she will brown the butter first, which gives a lot more flavor. So that's something that I think that's really unique that she brought to the recipe. And Kevin Gillespie's family cornbread recipe, I mean, that's a secret recipe. He doesn't disclose it, and that was just my attempt at making his cornbread recipe, which is real crispy little triangle-shaped corn cakes, real creamy inside, very, very delicious.
And you have little sidebar issues like how corn mm-hmm. was named. I mean, mm-hmm. there's so much mm-hmm. information that, in this book, that's the thing that I was talking about, that I don't know how we could cover it all, because you do have
yeah.
so much information.
It's a lot. The chapters, I wrote the book in a traditional cookbook style that starts with cornbread and then biscuits and then quick breads like muffins, and then I go into puddings and pies and cakes and cookies. So it's traditional, yet within each chapter, there's a variety of the recipes. You know, the cake recipes may be something that's a present-day recipe, or it may be a recipe from the early 1900s right next to it. So I wanted
yeah.
that kind of interplay of old and new throughout each chapter.
Well, you interwove them so nicely, and also you interwove, I mean, there have been so many varied influences on Southern cuisine, and you interwove that very simply and clearly.
Thank you. Thank you.
Without being,
thank you.
Without driving it home and hammering it.
Right. Well, there's, you know, back to the people that settled in the South. I mean, you know, we have influences from English baking as well as French baking in New Orleans and Charleston. And then we a lot of German baking. And the Germans who, you know, maybe were in Pennsylvania came on down the Great Wagon Road. They also came into other parts of the South. A lot of the spice cakes that we bake in the South, you know, they believe to have German roots to them. So I think it's so interesting to me to see all of these see these recipes that are in Southern cookbooks and to wonder where they came from. Where did that originate? And that was a lot of the research of the book, was taking those recipes back, yeah.
Yeah, because there are things on one level you just sort of assume that it's just generic Southern, like cornbread. You have photographs, which help too, because there's an awful lot of the cooking in the South really came out of Africa. And you handle that nicely with the photographs of the person who developed the recipe.
Thank you. Well, there were, you know, the Southern baking owes a debt of gratitude to enslaved cooks who not only really did the hard work of creating the cuisine, but also their knowledge of frying, their knowledge of cooking with rice. And yes, I do go into the story behind rice and why the enslaved came from the west coast of Africa and the hard work that was involved in building the dikes to grow rice and harvest it in the low country of South Carolina. I just felt like that was background important information to help you understand why so much of the foodways of South Carolina is based on rice.
You have Rosa Parks Feather Light Peanut Butter Pancakes. Now, who added the descriptive term Feather Light?
Feather Light. Well, that actually was a brand. So that was brand. It's right. So that was there were a number of old regional flours throughout the South, and you know, that's where a lot of people got their recipes. They got them right off the back of the bag or the back of the baking powder can. So. That's another kind of interesting part of exploring the history of your region are the companies that may not be in business anymore, but they used to be local providers of a lot of the ingredients that people cooked and baked with.
Sweetheart, am I remembering correctly that there was a diner in New Orleans called, I think it was called Mother's.
Uh-huh. It was
and you could walk across the street from the hotel we were staying at and have a breakfast to die for with lots and lots of bacon and all the burnt ends you can eat.
Yeah, Mother's is known for their country
cooking.
There you
go. I'm remembering correctly. How about
Mother?
Yes, you are. Right. Yes, you are. Mm-hmm.
There was another one you mentioned in the book, but I've sort of lost my place in it. There's a restaurant in Savannah where people line up around the block.
Mrs. Wilkes.
Yeah, we were there.
We went there.
That was amazing.
It was very odd because the gentleman member of the family was the guy who collected all the money.
Oh yeah. It's still in business, and I do tell the story behind that boarding house, and that restaurant, and it's still owned and operated by the family, which is really nice. Mrs. Wilkes' niece is running it, and I share their biscuit recipe. Yeah. I think in boarding houses throughout the South, they were created by women who needed to make an income. And what did they know how to do? Well, they knew how to cook. A lot of them already had a family. And so a boarding house was a great way for them to rent out rooms in the boarding house and to be able just to cook meals for the lodgers who were there. It was a way, especially in the 1930s, that women got by. And, you know, it and then I think the tea rooms that came out of the same sort of things, operating a tea room in a bigger city, allowed women to create a business for themselves.
Yeah, you have a lot of tips for people, which reminded me to ask, like, who, what user, end user, did you have in mind when you were writing this book? I mean, usually you have an audience in mind. Who is this for?
Broad. You know, I'd like to say that I knew exactly who would love this book. I do think people who people who like to bake, you know, will like this book. But I also think it's a book for someone who likes history and likes to understand a culture. Maybe you have, if you don't live in the South, you have ties to the South, or you've traveled in the South. I think it's that sort of reader. I selfishly wrote it for my children's generation, and you know, they're in their 30s. Will those pies that I grew up on, those meringue pies, be around when I'm gone? I don't know about that. They don't make meringue pies. That's something that we made, or my mother made.
My mother made
meringue pies.
So nobody makes it anymore? I don't bake at all, so.
Yeah.
But,
so I think it was a very broad audience, young and old, bakers and non-bakers, yeah.
You even have a king cake recipe in here.
Oh, yeah, got to have a king cake if you even enjoy New Orleans and New Orleans traditions. There are several cakes that involve yeast in them, like king cake, the sugar cake from the Moravian sugar cake from Salem, North Carolina, and also the Baba Arum, which is linked to New Orleans on Christmas Eve. One of my favorite cakes. It's almost a cake slash bread, but it's just soaked in rum and orange and raisins. It's really lovely.
It sounds divine. You have a recipe from Natalie Dupre, another one of our guests we've interviewed a couple of times.
Natalie. Oh, yeah, and Natalie's such a fun. She's been a longtime friend of mine. She ran the cooking school in Atlanta when I was the food editor for the newspaper in Atlanta for about 15 years, and that was when Natalie would have all the famous people, Julia Child and James Beard, and they would all come to Rich's Cooking School and give cooking classes. And Natalie knew everybody.
She did. She was a wonderfully interesting person herself, too.
Very much so, and she still is. And that biscuit recipe just speaks to her because she likes anything that's fast and fabulous.
You know, I read, here's your recipe, my grandmother's Virginia spoon bread. I don't think I ever really understood what spoon bread was until I read this in your cookbook.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's essentially a souffle. You're making sort of a custard that, you know, on top of the stove, cooking the cornmeal with butter, and then you add the egg yolks to it to really make it nice and rich. It's like the base of a souffle, and then you beat your egg whites, you fold them in, and then you pile it into a dish, and it rises up tall like a souffle, and it rises right back down when it comes out of the oven. It's delicious.
This coconut cream pie recipe looks like, I mean, I remember that from my childhood, and I've never made one in my life. But I remember having them. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, it's
so
fabulous.
Many, but this is like, it's making me very hungry looking at all these things that I used to have and don't have anymore because I can't make them. I guess I can make them now.
You could make them now. That's right. Or get someone to make them for you. But you definitely get somebody to make you that coconut cream pie. That'll take you back.
That was one of my mother's specialties, yeah.
Love it.
You have all these interesting stories that we only get snippets of. Like you have a recipe from James Hemings.
Yeah, he was the cook to Thomas Jefferson, right.
I never put together the culinary with the other story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
right.
That's great filling in the blanks here.
Right.
Now, what is it that you're mainly interested in? What people take from this book? What is your main objective with this book?
Well, it's my love letter to Southern Banking, and I think the objective is to more deeply understand banking in the South and to see how it came out of the culture of the South and the land of the South and the people. And that even in the South, which is about the size of Western Europe,
That was something I noticed. Right? That startled mm-hmm. me, too, the size
right.
of Western Europe. Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite large. So there is great diversity. And I think when you don't live in the South and you're outside the South, you may just lump us all together in the South. But it's the South is a complicated and diverse place, and it can't be all lumped together. And I think I show that in a big-hearted way through this book, because there's not just one way to make cornbread. There's not just one way to make biscuits. And I show the differences and how people in different places do it differently. And I tell stories and credit recipes to people who maybe have never been given credit before.
Well, it's a great accomplishment, this book, Ann Byrne. I don't know what you'd go on to do afterwards. What would your next book
breathe.
Be?
Well, that's mm-hmm. what people keep asking me. Well, people are asking me, what am I writing next? And I say, I'm just going to breathe. I'm going to go on book tour, and I'm just going to breathe, and then I'll figure it out.
Oh, you haven't done your book tour yet?
No, the book tour will begin in early September, yeah.
That's an experience.
That's right.
Well, listeners, this is something that you should buy and keep and use as a resource for a number of different subjects and understandings, including the culture of the South, the history of the South, interesting figures in the South, great recipes, a whole variety of variations, a whole variations of various recipes as well. Again, it's Baking in the American South, and it's 200 recipes and their untold stories. And the author is Ann Byrne, who has done an absolutely Herculean job. The photographer, we should also mention, is that Rennie Allen?
It's Wren. Rennie? You pronounce it Wren. Wren.
Wren.
Mm-hmm.
Wren
like the bird. Mm-hmm. Right.
And listeners, get there soon while the Old South is still in existence in places like Nashville.
Right.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if we could just hold on to certain things, right? So.
Right.
Well, good luck on your book tour.
Thank you so much, Anne. I do appreciate it. And,
well, I appreciated the book, and I appreciate talking to you, so thank you very much.
Sounds correct. Okay, thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
You. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.